also tonight, President Biden's dilemma. He says he stands by the female protesters risking their lives in Iran, but he's also trying to keep a nuclear problem out of the leader's hands. So which of the battles will he pick? Plus, Tom Cruise's marriages, John Travolta's secrets. Never in a billion years were the backstage workings of the Church of Scientology supposed to come out. But here they come, straight from a former church exec. He joins me live. And later, how far will Russian civilians go to remain civilians? Tonight, some potential draftees are out of the Kremlin's clutches and in a country not likely to send them back. But you won't believe on whose shores they turned up. We're going to tell you straight ahead on Banfield. Hello and welcome to Banfield. If you are keeping track of the fast-moving scandal surrounding a political newcomer in Georgia, a newcomer who could swing the control of the United States Senate back to the Republicans, your head is probably spinning tonight, and for good reason. The news just keeps getting worse for Herschel Walker. In just four short days, 5 weeks before the election, he was reported to have paid for a girlfriend's abortion and then flatly denied it. He promised to sue the Daily Beast for reporting it, but so far he hasn't. He called the allegations a sign of desperation by the left, but ignored the backlash from his own conservative son. And he insisted he has no idea who the unnamed alleged former girlfriend could be, even after the Beast dropped a major clue. She's the mom of one of his children. And when Walker denied that today, another bombshell. He'd forgotten that he confirmed her existence to the Daily Beast just a few months ago. The Beast also says years after the abortion, the woman and Walker had a child together, and Walker's own campaign admitted as much this summer. They also say they independently confirmed the claim with a family court clerk and a court order that showed a DNA test confirming Walker was the father. News Nation has not independently verified any of this, but the Beast has plenty of receipts. And now Politico is reporting that Georgia Republican higher-ups knew all about this abortion story long ago, and that they'd actually confronted Walker's team about it. According to Politico's sources, and I'll quote, it was like everything else. People aren't going to find out. That's not exactly a denial, and neither are Walker's comments today to conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt.
I've already been forgiven, and if I've been forgiven, why in the world would I not be forgiven of something like that? And I'm not saying forgiven. You're here.
Is there anything you need to be forgiven for vis-a-vis a woman whose name we do not know? Do you know who this woman is, and do you need to be forgiven?
Well, that's what's so funny. And I'm saying I've been forgiven because of all the things I did when I went to my the thing with my ex-wife and all that, and things I did, I don't know how many years ago that I wrote in my book. I said, guys, I wasn't perfect. I had my problem with mental health. And I've been born again, but I have a new life, and I've been moving forward. And if that had happened, I would have said it, because there's nothing to be ashamed of there. You know, people have done that, but I know nothing about it.
Well, we'll know soon enough whether and how much Georgia voters really care about any of this. But the state's top Republican officials who are on the ballot themselves in 33 days, they're not so happy. I want you to listen to Georgia's Lieutenant Governor Jeff Duncan, who said this on CNN.
Even the most staunch Republicans, I think, are rattled at the continued flow of information. I think every Republican knew that there was baggage out there. But the weight of that baggage is starting to feel a little closer to unbearable at this point.
So Herschel Walker was out campaigning regardless today, and when he met up with reporters, they asked him about this new part of the story that it's actually a mom of his other child that says she had the abortion. He denied it. He denied the abortion report, and then he vowed to win the election. But the issue that he seemed to struggle the most with was really bizarre. It was who the Republican lieutenant governor of his own state, the guy who was just saying all that, who that guy even was.
I think his direct quote, paraphrasing it, was the only reason he's a Republican nominee is because he scored a lot of touchdowns for the University of Georgia.
Now, who was it you said went, did that?
Jeff Duncan.
Oh, what is he doing now?
Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, I don't know. What is he doing now? He's a, he does work for who? Don't he go on some TV show all the time? No. Don't he go on a TV and talk a lot?
He's still the
Don't he go on TV and talk a lot? Right now, you know people like that. Do I listen to? You know, people told me I couldn't play football. So do you want me to listen to someone like that? I'm here to win the seat for the Georgia people because the Georgia people need a winner.
Again, the key question, will any of this make a difference to Georgia's Republican voters? Bill Kristol's a veteran political journalist and analyst and currently editor-at-large of The Bulwark. Tara Wall is a journalist and a political commentator. And Stuart Stevens is the senior advisor for the Lincoln Project, who's worked on the Romney, McCain, and George W. Bush campaigns, among many others. Okay, Stuart, I'm going to begin with you. Is it possible that on the heels of what the lieutenant governor said, that other Georgia Republicans and maybe Republicans further afoot will start cutting bait and watching for their own skins?
Well, I hope so. Look, you know, at moments like this, I think we have to remind ourselves that Donald Trump was someone who talked in public about having sex with his daughter, and Republicans nominated him, and a lot of them still think that he's president. So, you know, I wrote a book called It Was All a Lie, because I didn't know any other conclusion to come to, because the candidates that Republicans are voting for are so distant from the values that they say that they believe, that I don't know how else to square it. So I think it's a positive thing what the lieutenant governor said. You should just draw the line here. A Senate seat is not as important, which you're probably going to lose anyway. It's not as important as standing for something and trying to resurrect some sense of decency and dignity about the party.
Yeah, that's what I mean about saving, you know, saving your skin. Tara, what about the idea of allowing Herschel Walker to be out there in front of all the mics? I mean, maybe he's his own guy. I don't know. But a disciplined candidate, maybe this close to the election might be helpful.
Yeah. Money, sex, lies, supposed lies. This all sounds salacious, like a salacious television show. But I think it's telling about the state of politics, especially when it comes to a hotly contested Senate race like this one. And it's certainly, you know, a lot of this is just simple communications 101. It's messaging 101. You know, for all the talk that the party has had about some of these morality issues, which are not necessarily vote getters at the end of the day. But I think that he's beyond a flawed character, and some of the vetting that has taken place that of course takes place for it to be ignored. On campaigns I've worked in the past, I don't recall things like, you know, raising to this level that would ever fly as far as being allowable, if you will, for a candidate to get away with.
So here's what I keep coming back to. And Bill, after all of your years of watching how these races play out and the playbooks, oppo research is a normal thing. It's opposition research. You spend lots and lots of time looking into the background of an opposition candidate, and then you time it and drop it right when it would be strategically beneficial. And now I'm wondering if the budgets for opposition research are going to go away, because good for you. You spent a bunch of money and it made no difference.
Yeah, and the issues don't make any difference anymore. So I guess we just have, you know, these sort of tribal elections. Everyone just shows up and votes for their party. Surely isn't healthy. I mean, two quick points, actually. The lieutenant governor, who you showed the clip of, he's not running for re-election. And he's been critical of Donald Trump. But he's saying the truth, but he's on his way out. And I haven't seen any other senior Georgia Republicans criticizing Herschel Walker. The Republican Senatorial Committee is all in. And think of the contrast to 2017 with Roy Moore. That came out, his own colleague, the Republican senator from Alabama, Senator Shelby, said he couldn't vote for Roy Moore 2 days before the election. Maybe it decides the difference, actually. He wrote in, I think, some third person who didn't want to vote for the Democrat. But Mitch McConnell said, urged Moore to pull out of the race. The Senatorial Committee suspended its support. They kind of, at near the end of the race, they sort of weakened on their principle a little bit. But in the first year of Trump, before Trump had had totally corrupted the Republican Party and damaged our politics as much as he has, there was still a sense that, gee, this, you can't support this kind of thing. And his, and as I say, senators called on Warder not to withdraw, and Shelby said he wouldn't support him. You're seeing none of that this time. Everyone is all in on Walker. And for me, that says so much about the progress, or really the degeneracy, of the Republican Party over the last 5 years.
Or does it, Stuart, say that we've become parliamentary people, meaning we are just voting for the seat, we need the seat, we need the votes, we don't really care who's sitting in the seats anymore?
Well, let's put this issue aside. Is anybody in the United States Senate going to walk over to Herschel Walker and ask him, what does he think about an issue? I mean, I worked for the last Republican senator who was elected there, Johnny Isaacson, who sadly passed away, which opened up a seat. And he was a thoughtful person who was well respected by both parties. You know, we forget that you're electing these people to actually solve really difficult problems. And who in the world would turn to Herschel Walker to solve any sort of problem? I mean, the man clearly has deep issues that are probably physiological, it seems to be. The guy needs help. It seems he should not be running for the United States Senate. And the fact that it's taking something like this to possibly disqualify him is in itself just sort of a stunning indictment of where the Republican Party is.
Okay, let's pause there for a minute, because I want to sort of fly 30,000 feet above all of this, because this is not the first time that there's been a pearl-clutching scandal in modern U.S. politics. Let's go back to Chappaquiddick in 1969. Senator Ted Kennedy swam away from a car crash that drowned a young staffer. It was rumored that they'd been romantic. He survived the scandal, but it may have kept him from ever being president. 1987, Gary Hart. His presidential bid is dashed over this photo. It shows Donna Rice and him. They were on a back of a boat called Monkey Business at one point. Neither of them ever admitted the affair, but poof, that was enough. Marion Barry in 1990, just this incredibly charismatic D.C. mayor, caught smoke and crack. Yes, smoke and crack in an FBI sting. Went in the pokey for 6 months and then came back out and got his job back. Bill Clinton, I think we all know, he was impeached over his 1998 scandal, and he lived to regret saying this.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Well, that wasn't necessarily the best thing he could have said. He was not removed from office, and he did end up serving two full terms, of course. But then that brings us to another president, Donald Trump. 2016. In fact, it was just 6 years ago tomorrow, in the home stretch of a presidential campaign that he was expected to lose, this soundbite suddenly surfaced from a decade earlier.
I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. But I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the.
Well, I could certainly go on and on, right? But yikes. How about John Edwards? He tanks his hopes for a vice presidential bid with a secret love child. And then Arnold Schwarzenegger falls from grace after a long affair with his housekeeper that, in fact, he fathered a love child with her in the same bed that he shared with his famous wife, Maria Shriver. And then there was Senator Larry Craig. How could we forget him? He taps his toes for gay sex in an airport bathroom after voting for years and years against gay rights. And then New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, he blew up after fighting prostitution, but then indulging on it on the side. These were really career-ending scandals, and rightly so. But would they end a career now? Does character count now? Tara, you want to take that one?
Well, it should. It should absolutely count. And unfortunately, you know, like I said before, I think it is certainly indicative of where we've come in this political landscape. I think to some people, it's a matter that the attitude now, it seems, is win at all costs. And that seems to speak volumes. As flawed as these characters are, and as flawed as even Herschel Walker is, it really says more about the establishment than anything else. And this was something that I examined a couple years ago, my last documentary about the soul of the Republican Party, and how it really needs to re-examine itself and restore itself back to what is and what was this party of Lincoln, supposedly. What has happened to that? There has to be, I think, at some point, a reckoning. You can only, that bar, I think, can only go so low, but certainly it has been lowered.
Okay, so here's something else that I want to run, and I want to ask you, Bill, about the primaries, and if the primaries may no longer be the friend of Republicans, maybe Democrats as well, but certainly I want you to listen to what the lieutenant governor also said last night about how we ended up here in this place with a candidate like Herschel Walker. Take a listen.
If we're being intellectually honest, Herschel Walker won the primary because he scored a bunch of touchdowns back in the 80s, and he was Donald Trump's friend. And now we've moved forward several months on the calendar, and that's no longer a recipe to win.
So what do you think? Primaries, looking forward, is there going to be some kind of new strategy here?
Well, but I agree with Tara's point. I mean, Donald Trump endorsed him, and he was very famous in Georgia, great star in the University of Georgia, obviously. So he had an advantage. But Mitch McConnell then endorsed him, thinking, well, I don't want to fight Trump, but I'm fighting Trump some other places. And then everyone just rolled over. He had some opposition in the primary, but it was not well-funded kind of token. So in the old days, you might have had a lot of people, as Stuart said, thinking this guy really isn't up to being a senator. Georgia's had some pretty impressive senators of both parties in my days in Washington. We'll get together and see if we can't persuade someone else to run and raise some money for him or her and make a case. And there was no effort like that. So the party establishment, I really agree with Tara on this. There's a lot of responsibility. This is partly a Herschel Walker story, but it's partly a Republican Party going along with him getting the nomination. He clearly wasn't qualified. And now defending him absolutely up and down, you know, to the hilt. I mean, there's no defections that I know of. No senator, no member of Congress, no senior Republican in Georgia has said, gee, this is maybe Mr. Warpy, you should step aside. Zero.
Well, other than that, the lieutenant governor who said this is, you know, right, getting to be baggage that's too heavy to carry. Okay, so Stuart, here's the reality. Like, you know, around January, the Republicans were looking at the potential of really contesting six seats, right? And that's kind of narrowed down to two. And so if you look at those two, Nevada and Georgia, if they lose Pennsylvania, you know, the Oz Fetterman, if they lose that one, they have to win Georgia and Nevada. So I almost look at it like it's a death match at this point, meaning there's nothing. I mean, this is survival to keep Herschel Walker in the game. But how do you?
Well, look, this lies at the feet of two individuals in Washington more than anything else, Mitch McConnell and Rick Scott. Rick Scott is head of the Republican Senatorial Committee, and Mitch McConnell basically runs the Republican Party in Washington. Both of them think that they're masters at politics, and actually neither one of them are very good at it. They're the ones who selected these candidates. They didn't have to do this. And one of the things, you know, I would ask all the companies out there, the corporations that are giving money to the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee and giving money to Mitch McConnell's PAC, you are supporting these candidates. And a lot of these people, they won't even admit who the president of the United States is legally elected. And in a way, a scandal like this is almost a diversion from a larger scandal, which is a majority of Republicans do not believe we live in a democracy now. Because if Joe Biden was not legally elected, then he's an occupier. And that takes you down a whole road. Because if you believe that, you not only have a right to do whatever it takes to defeat him, maybe you have an obligation. And that has a lot to do with so much violence in our politics today. So the Republican Party decided that it exists for one reason, and that's to elect Republicans. And that's not how political parties operate. That's how, like, a cartel operates. Nobody asks OPEC, what is your higher purpose? Like, they sell oil. And that's what happened to the Republican Party. I mean, once we said it was a party of ideas, there are no ideas. There are no policy now in the Republican Party. It's just about power for the sake of power.
But then there's also populism, right? Let's throw this into the mix. And you know, maybe you can talk to this, Tara. If we're just going to resort to populism, right? Who is on a reality show and who can get votes because of name recognition? And, you know, there's lots of studies that show a lot of people thought Donald Trump from The Apprentice was a great businessman because they watched The Apprentice, right? So populism is strong. It's important. But you get all the baggage that comes with populism. A big, strong football player, beloved by football fans and you know, more. Is that the way we have to live our lives now? Basically, you get what you get when you're dumb enough to only decide, America, that populist candidates are where it's at.
No, because, I mean, first of all, I don't think anyone thought Donald Trump was going to win, even though he did, despite, you know, despite this rhetoric about, you know, he is the way he is. We accept him the way he is. I don't think there has to be a dumbing down, if you will. I think that you can have, I mean, I think there are plenty of viable, potential, intelligent candidates. I think someone just made the decision that they were going to ignore the obvious because they, you know, they wanted another black candidate to go up against another black candidate in Georgia, in the South, where, by the way, you know, more black men, more black Republicans actually vote more conservative. So, you know, they figure he's got more of a shot. So, yes, it was like, you know, we're just going to take, you know, we're going to take what comes. We don't care. You know, all bets are off. And I think that's unfortunate. I don't think it has to be that way. I think there are plenty of viable candidates. I think it's a disgrace for those who are actually, you know, in the wings, if you will, who are totally 100% credible, that are waiting to get the kind of support that a Herschel Walker that doesn't come with all of this baggage. Again, the establishment has got to start making some really soul-searching decisions that goes beyond wanting to just win a race. That is what's wrong with politics. It's disgusting. And I think the party needs to change the trajectory back to what it used to be, instead of this all-in battle to just win at the cost of the party.
And rainbows and unicorns. I love rainbows and unicorns. I'm hoping for the best, and I love your smiles, and thank you all for your wisdom. I appreciate it tonight. I'm looking forward to having you back.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
A quick reminder, folks, News Nation is the exclusive network home of the Georgia Senate debate. Aha, you are not going to miss this one, right? So it's next Friday. That's October 14th. Mark it in your calendar. Starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. We've got Debate in America, which is hosted by Leland Vittert. That's live from Savannah, Georgia. Afterwards, my colleague Chris Cuomo is going to have live analysis and all the reaction. And again, if I need to repeat it, which I will, it is only on News Nation. We are thrilled to have this debate. Still to come. What is more? Welcome back. Women are dying by the dozens. Violent deaths on the streets of Iran. But there is a new twist tonight to their bloody fight against the Ayatollah and his leadership there. Some of those who are being beaten to death are just girls. One of the dead protesters, a 16-year-old named Mika Shakrami. She went missing after telling a friend that she was being chased by the police. Mika's aunt and uncle told state media that she, quote, fell from a building. But a source says those statements were forced confessions. And her death certificate says something quite different. Multiple injuries caused by blows with a hard object. Two other female protesters also died under mysterious circumstances. 22-year-old Hadis Najafi was killed on September 21st. Her family says she was shot to death by security forces, but that the officials, well, they asked her father to say that she died of a heart attack. And 16-year-old Serena Ismailzadeh, she died on September 23rd. A source told Amnesty International that security forces beat her head with batons and that authorities told her family to remain silent. It all started when last month, 22-year-old Mahsa Amini was arrested for not wearing her headscarf. And actually she was wearing it. She just wasn't wearing it properly. But she died in Iranian police custody. And in protest, Iranian women began publicly cutting their hair and burning their headscarves. The result, live bullets, metal pellets, and tear gas, and at least 82 people dead. 30 of those dead just on Friday, which is a day that's now being called Bloody Friday. The violent deaths of these girls and women have been like gasoline on a fire. It did not have the effect that all those religious leaders were hoping. Even more women are now flooding out into the marches, including schoolgirls. Schoolgirls who have defiantly walked out of class. Look at these kids. Look at these kids. They walked out of class. And many of them removed their hijab, their head coverings. And then what they're saying is even more important. Death to the dictator. Try saying that on the streets of Iran and see what happens to you. These are schoolgirls. The protests are spreading too. Italy, Spain, Turkey, Belgium. And in France, where they're protesting, they're doing something more. Check this out. Oscar winners Juliette Binoche and Marion Cotillard posting images of themselves cutting off their hair in solidarity with their Iranian sisters. And America has joined the uprising in Iran as well. At least on paper, we have. Joe Biden today issued sanctions against 7 senior Iranian officials. Before today, President Biden had been criticized for not doing enough to help those protesters. But he is walking a hell of a tightrope. He's trying to reach a nuclear deal with Iran, since there's really been no international oversight there since 2018, when President Trump ended the last deal that was in the works. But at the same time, he is publicly praising what he calls the brave women of Iran. Shireen Behzadi, she fled Iran after 1979, the revolution, and she's now the president of her own company. She still has family living in Iran, and she joins me live. Shireen, thanks so much for being with me. When I lay that all out, and I, you know, mention that Biden's really walking a tightrope here, he's trying to make sure that Iran doesn't get, you know, nuclear weapons, but at the same time, he's desperately trying, I think, to support, you know, basic human rights. It must be very hard for you, you know, watching from this side of the world, trying to come to terms and rationalize what he's doing. What do you think of his efforts?
Well, first of all, Ashley, thanks for having me and thanks for covering this. I'm not a politician. I'm not a reporter. I'm a business person. I've tried my best ever since I immigrated to the United States to live a productive life, as many immigrants have. But at this point, with this movement, silence is betrayal. As you mentioned, you have schoolgirls. The kind of courage and bravery you see on the streets of Iran is unbelievable. We have women, we have men, we have young and old, we have people that are religious and non-religious, all rising to ask for basic, foundational, fundamental human and civil rights. What the United States exemplifies in the world still today is leadership. And as leaders, we need to show our support for what's going on in Iran. I understand that politics gets complicated. I personally want to stay away from it. But the question here is, how do we give the people of Iran, who are, by the way, in 80-some cities demonstrating, have been demonstrating for weeks, risking their lives, as Jim mentioned, and as well, their university students involved, we need to give them a voice. Internet has been...
So you know what? Here's the problem, Shireen. Giving them a voice is even physically, technically difficult because the Iranian government has been, you know, cutting the internet. So it's hard to even get these images out that we're seeing on the screen right now. I know that you have family there. So two questions. Have you been able to keep in contact with them, given the fact that, you know, communications are just so spotty? And then the second question, are they worried? Are they scared? And are they telling you things that even we're not seeing on the screen?
Yes, it is very difficult to connect. People are somber. People are scared. People are concerned, but also angry, but also clearly have reached a boiling point where they're hitting the streets. I understand that giving them internet access is difficult, but there are ways that we can support, promote, technology companies that can open up some opportunities for people to be able to communicate. Human rights organizations have to step in here. You're absolutely right. There are stories after stories, Bible stories of university students being attacked. They're cornered. They close the doors on them and attack them to bring fear. There have been people that have been arrested. And people don't hear from them. So at the end of the day, this is a crisis, and I believe that we all owe it to ourselves as citizens of the world to step in to help with internet access, to give them a voice, to do coverage like you are doing right now, Ashley.
Well, and also just pay attention, right? Pay attention when human rights are being violated and little girls are getting beaten up in the street just for wanting to uncover their head. We'll continue to cover it. We'll have you back as well. Shireen Bazadi, thank you so much for being on tonight.
Thank you for having me.
All right, still to come, Tom Cruise is in it. So is John Travolta and Leah Remini. She just about blew the lid off of it. Church of Scientology is a mysterious, if not baffling, religion where rumors abound of blackmail and repression. But till now, much of it has just been that, rumors. I say till now because one of its executives is spilling the secrets of the sect, and he is live with me next. So its most famous member is Tom Cruise. Then John Travolta, Kirstie Alley, and Leah Remini line up right behind them. They are members of the Church of Scientology, arguably one of the most mysterious and secretive religions to boast thousands of members. It is often the target of tabloid fodder, like when Tom Cruise did this, you know, jumping up on Oprah's couch, declaring his love for Katie Holmes. That is kind of when the bells began to go off and all the prying really began. Rumors started that the church had actually arranged the third marriage of Tom Cruise to Katie Holmes. And soon the rumors became reporting. But tonight we are learning so much more, and not just from journalists, from a leader inside the church itself. Mike Rinder was a senior executive with the Church of Scientology, and you could say he was a lifelong member, having signed an actual document saying he'd belong for a billion years. You heard right. A billion-year contract. But somewhere amidst the tabloid scandals and the humiliating reports, Mike Rinder cut ties. And then Mike Rinder wrote a book. Among his bombshells, revelations that Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman's marriage was orchestrated. Their divorce, that too, was captained by the church. According to Rinder, the Tom and Nicole time that they were spending on that movie set of Eyes Wide Shut did not sit well with the pious church executives, and the fix was in. Nicole Kidman had to go. Rinder claims that David Beckham was also a key target for Scientology. He says that the church even built an extravagant soccer field just to woo and recruit that megastar, using Tom Cruise as an ambassador. It didn't work. Despite Tom's high-octane glow, didn't work. And that's just the tip of the iceberg in what Rinder is revealing. And after the break, he's going to tell me the rest. The secrets of Scientology are kind of like catnip for conspiracy theorists, but they are also fascinating news for the rest of us. From rumors about Tom Cruise to the extramarital gay love life of John Travolta, the church has been tabloid fodder for a few decades now. But tabloids are one thing. First-hand accounts are quite another. Mike Rinder was a high-ranking executive in the church, and he says much of what has been whispered is actually true. Spying, intimidation, cover-ups, even violence at the hands of its leader, David Miscavige. Rinder escaped, wrote a book, and then agreed to talk to me. His book is called A Billion Years, My Escape from a Life in the Highest Ranks of Scientology. Mike, thanks so much for being with me tonight. First question right off the bat, what else is in your book that is going to turn heads and probably make the church pretty mad?
A lot, Ashley. Thank you so much for having me on. I think that the details about how David Miscavige managed to rise to power in Scientology and some of the things that are revealed about L. Ron Hubbard, the founder of Scientology, and the insanity that goes on at the highest levels of the inner sanctum of Scientology, I think that those are the things that will rankle them the most, not really even the celebrity stuff.
So the church celebrates marriage. It frowns upon divorce. And yet there's all these revelations in your book about orchestrating, you know, Tom Cruise out of his first marriage and then into a marriage with Nicole Kidman and then out of that marriage and into an arranged situation with his next wife. But I can't understand how this isn't something that would ruin their, you know, reputation and tank their image.
Well, that's a really good question, Ashley. Celebrities are treated very differently in Scientology. Celebrities are held on a very high pedestal because they give credibility to, or believe they give credibility to Scientology. So the way that they get treated is very different than the way that others get treated. And and that particularly goes for what happens when they have a marital situation. They aren't treated like other Scientologists. I think that for the most part, Scientologists look at the life of Tom Cruise and go, well, he's the most successful movie star in the world, so we give him a pass on not living up to the standards that Scientologists are expected to maintain with respect to marriages.
So then tell me a little bit about this other story that's just been circulating forever about Tom Cruise, or rather about John Travolta. You say in the book that you actually witnessed John Travolta with a male masseur who was, I think, wearing a bathrobe and kissed him, like, fully on the lips. What was the circumstance of what you witnessed?
Just what you described, Ashley. And the reason for me putting that in the book was not because I'm trying to out John Travolta. I don't think that I need to out John Travolta. I was making the point of the hypocrisy of Scientology, that Scientology is notoriously homophobic, and internally, that is how Scientologists view homosexuality, that it is a bad condition that can be resolved with Scientology. I believe firmly that if John Travolta was not a Scientologist, he would not try to pretend that he is anything other than what he is sexually. There's no stigma associated with it other than inside Scientology. Because if John Travolta was openly gay, for example, inside Scientology, people would start scratching their head and going, wait a minute, auditing is supposed to deal with that. He should have been cured of that by now. So that, I make the point that I believe that that is why he doesn't just come right out and say whatever it is that he is his sexual orientation.
Has the church or Travolta or Cruz or anybody else who's been written about in the book, have they threatened to sue you, or have they, you know, filed suits for defamation or anything like that?
No. Scientology sends threat letters. Those people don't.
Interesting if there isn't a suit, because then you got to go under oath and you got to answer the questions. Real quickly, as a fixer, you were actually in the church's Office of Special Affairs. Woof, that's a scary kind of title. I'm curious, I'm hearing in the book that you're tasked with, intimidation and cover-up, but what were special affairs and what did you do to intimidate and cover up in your role?
Well, Special Affairs is a euphemistic name that of the Department of Scientology that replaced the old infamous Guardian's office when they were caught by the U.S. government and their leaders ended up in prison for infiltrating the United States government back in the late 1970s. The Office of Special Affairs has the task of silencing and destroying utterly, if possible, the words of L. Ron Hubbard, the enemies of Scientology. And enemies in the world of Scientology is anybody who is critical, anybody who is questioning, anybody who is going out into the media and saying, look, there are abuses ongoing in Scientology and they need to be stopped. Those people become what Scientology, what Hubbard called fair game. And they are harassed by private investigators. They're threatened legally. They have smear sites made about them that go up on the internet. They have videos made about them. They steal their garbage. They put cameras. They hack their emails. Anything that they believe will intimidate the person into silence.
Well, I have to say, you know, we've reached out. The Church of Scientology has denied a lot of the allegations that are made in the book. It is fascinating reading, though, Mike Render, I will tell you that. Thank you for being on and talking about it. The book is called A Billion Years, My Escape from the Life in the Highest Ranks.